Hello and welcome to the Weird Things Podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Oh, hello, friends.
And Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Ahoy.
Gentlemen, interesting week going on in the world of AI, which we talk about other things, just so everybody knows.
There's many weird things, and AI is a weird thing.
Yeah, I would say one of the biggest pieces of news, though, this week was OpenAI announcing that they're going to sunset the Sora app.
R.I.P.
Yeah. Sad times. I really do think that, even to this day, is clearly, I think, the most user-friendly version of character creation and replication, as far as I think probably being the gold standard in terms of that level of character control, or at least consistency between different scenes. But, you know, really, I mean, look, there's a lot of hot takes about this one, Maine. There was a $1 billion deal with Disney that was announced not but a few months ago. That appears to be scuttled now.
Wait, the deal is scuttled?
Yeah.
Oh.
So.
Oh.
Well, that's... it was for Sora. It was for the Sora app. And then, you know, I guess skinning the Sora app to, you know, or using clips of that, like on Disney Plus and stuff like that. But yeah, reports even that Disney was blindsided by it, that they were unaware that it was going to happen. Now,
wow.
I'm going to say, I don't know exactly where the threshold is. I assume that all Hollywood reporting is eventually going to become tech reporting and vice versa, as Hollywood continues to become a wholly owned subsidiary of Silicon Valley. But I don't know where, you know, really to make of that. I do know that it means that OpenAI is just making, they don't believe a $1 billion deal with Disney is something that is mission critical, I guess, would be my only for sure indication.
Well, so I think this is an interesting thing, because what was Disney buying in on? They're buying in on enthusiasm and user install base and interest in it. But a thing that is happening is with revolutions every 14 days like clockwork, we're getting pretty inured to incredible things. And all of a sudden, it's like $1 billion is a lot of money to give for something that may feel old in 6 months. I don't know.
Well, the strategy had been that they were going to use Sora in Disney's platform for doing video generation, let users create videos. They see a real demand for that. Where that'll go, and I don't know the details. I don't know how much, what changed or what not there. And also remember, you just had a new CEO brought into Disney. Which kind of is the sort of gets lost in the headlines. New CEO comes in and maybe, who knows? I don't know enough to know. I do think that, you know, user generated videos and AI stuff is the wave of the future. But I do think that I think part of it, though, is that OpenAI said, hey, we need to focus more on certain core areas. They've been building out for the future, which is great. It's funny because it's like Anthropic's been having a great moment. Anthropic's been doing really, really well. But Anthropic was also kind of famously, we're not sure if you need to be scaling as much compute as possible. And then, you know, the meme screenshot this week was, with Thibaut, who's the head of Codex, who we've interviewed for the OpenAI podcast.
Mm-hmm. Good guy.
He's been resetting. Every time they do an update to Codex, it might be kind of a big change. They're like, all right, we're resetting your limits. Guess what? It starts over, which... it's cool. And then yesterday I had like 99% of everything left in reset. I'm like, great. Thanks for the 1%. You could have done this, you know, day before, day after. But anyhow, super cool that they do that. Meanwhile, Anthropic sent out a notice saying, hey, everybody, listen, you're still going to get the same usage every week. It's just during work hours. It's not going to be the same because...
Yeah, Brian, nights and weekend minutes are back.
Oh, my God.
Remember nights and weekend minutes?
Yeah, you're right.
In quad form.
That's crazy.
Well, it does show you. I mean, with you know, Claude had that moment after the Pentagon thing where you, because of all the attention that they got and the definition of
Anthropic being this kind of resistance principled company. They got a large swath of people that were going to try them, and they are seeing growth there. What they are also seeing is what OpenAI has seen probably over the last year and a half, and I think probably the reason to loop back to Sora, that Sora is no longer with us, and that is compute constraint. There's only so much compute that you have to go around. It's part of the reason why whenever anybody says AI is a bubble, it's all going to go away. Here's the one thing that you got to remind them is that right now, all of these companies are redlining in terms of their compute. The demand is way outstripping what they have to serve right now. And it also hampers their ability to serve things. So, latch on to that, the fact that it does seem, and reporting from the information and other outlets seem to both point to the idea that both Anthropic and OpenAI are possibly looking to IPO this year. The information reported today that Anthropic is looking to do it in Q4. And part of what is going into that are launching what both of them claim behind the scenes are gigantic new models that are going to redefine the way that we think of the way that we use this technology. And obviously there's a lot of hype in this field, but you haven't seen usually when Anthropic and OpenAI promise something, they deliver. At least they have over the last several years. And granted, the pressure is really high on both of them right now. But if they're looking to serve something that theoretically is going to be used more by people and might be a bigger model that they have to have inference for, then that means that compute only gets more tight. You know, that all these data centers are going to be coming online over the next year and a half, but they need every inch of it immediately. And Anthropic's feeling the pinch in the same way that OpenAI did about a year ago.
Yep.
I feel like we're watching more and more people code, and I have an idea of kind of a topic I want to talk about, which I think I've seen the future. And mm-hmm. and side note, our friend Brett Rounceville, you know, he's been doing a lot more coding and working on different projects. And he was thinking about, hey, I think I should get myself one of these Mac minis like other people are doing to run stuff locally and do that. And he's like, hey, they're sold out for the future. I'm like, yes. And that's the thing, is that we're so compute restrained. I got mine in 24 hours because I bought mine months ago when I saw this coming. And I'm like, and you just sort of see this sort of trend. And I right now, I've been in any given moment, I feel like I'm a farmer now, because I just start these projects in Codex and I come back and I check in on them like, this was going good. Okay, do this now and come back in and check it later. And, you know, at night with my wife, I'm like, yeah, we'll hang out, but I might just go in and check on my computer for a little bit, just a little bit to make sure things are progressing. Things are building
10 hours later.
Yeah. And I've noticed a couple things. OpenAI opened up plugins, by the way, for Codex yesterday. So you can actually have Codex connect to your Gmail, your Google Drive, all these things. Brian, we should have a conversation now about the workflow for weird things. We might just go to a Codex workflow to just do deployment. It might actually be easier to do that. I think that we're seeing now this pattern of, one, the tools are getting really, really good and people are having a lot of fun vibe coding, building with Claude Code and Codex and other tools. I was thinking about this the other night. I'm like, man, I love building. I really, really love making things. And I think a lot of other people are discovering the joy or rediscovering the joy of making things. And I kind of think the future will be vibe coded in the sense that you might get a lot of people come together and say, hey, let's go build a thing. Let's go do a thing, because we can get that. You're starting to get a result very quickly, which just triggers like your neural transmitters. Like all of a sudden my reward function is rewarded because now I see something happen. And I started to think about, you know, what happens when I connect to my 3D printer and all of this, et cetera.
Oh man, I really was patiently waiting. I was convinced all of this was a tee up to announce our entry for the Vibe Code jam that we announced last week and got entries for.
This video episode never got posted.
Oh, so we only had one person who was live. So far, only one entry so far. So
we didn't actually, this episode, last week's episode hasn't gone by live. I got to talk to you because there was some technical issue.
Okay. Well, that makes me feel even better that we got one. We got one despite the fact that we were only live. That's great.
Yeah. That is amazing then. Yeah.
Florida Python Challenge, live from the 2025 Florida Python Challenge. So this is a weird things themed games. Each correspondent has, we have AI reporters. We have a video player. Use the main player to watch the current report. Add arms. You can arm the correspondents, then click and drag a player to extra limbs on the broadcast. Live from the 2025 Florida Python Challenge. Weird things live coverage and interview. So here we go.
Hey, y'all. This is On the Ground reporting for the Weird Things podcast. I'm here at the 2025 Florida Python Challenge that just wrapped up. 934 participants from 30 states and Canada helped remove 294 pythons over this 10-day event. This year's ultimate grand prize winner, Taylor Stanberry, removed 60 Burmese pythons herself. That's just bananas.
All right. So I was able to add many arms. Boy, this is the most functional thing I've ever seen. I love it. The buttons on here, you play the video. We got a virtual report and then you can add arms. So now we got the next recommended transmission is Sasquatch reports live from the ocean landing platform.
Reporting live from the ocean where SpaceX is trying to land a rocket on this itty bitty platform. Let's see if they can do it again.
That's amazing. This is so good. So far, those are the only two missives. I can't wait to see more.
I like that there's just an ability to add arms.
Yeah.
Like apropos of nothing. You can just add random arms to the video as it's playing.
Oh, that's so good.
And they do just pull out of the ether.
This is fantastic. I'm just going to add arms all day.
Yeah, yeah. No, this is unfortunate for Brian's ADD, but he just has the ability to pull arms out of
Wait until I vibe code the ability to do it on the live stream to guests. This is just going to be, you get on a heater, make it a hot point, and all of a sudden arms start spreading out of things.
Exactly. Revolutionary new ways to derail points.
Yeah, I it's exciting. Thank you for the submission. This is great. I think that now what we're seeing is that the tools have gotten so good. I don't know if I shared this here, but a project I worked on started like a week or so ago was just watching Brian. All right, Brian.
Okay, sorry. Here, let me clear arms.
I built a thing because I wanted to try doing game building, but was trying to figure out ways to do it under constraints. And so I have a website called codexarcade.com. And the rule was everything has to be under like 2,048 characters is what you can fit inside of a URL or a PNG, or excuse me, a QR code. And so...
So the entirety of it is in the QR code.
Yeah. Yeah. The entirety, like right now you see the slideshow there at Serpent Vault. That's the whole code. That's the entire thing. So if you scan it with your phone, it actually unpacks that and it'll use a website that just says like a landing site to do it. But because data URLs, which is another way to do it, like iPhone doesn't like it. Otherwise I would have done it just entirely like that. But the whole code is there. You could just take that QR code and reconstruct the entire game from it.
That's incredible. How cool.
Some of them are cool. Like, go look at one of the more impressive demos there. You know, some of them look cool, but some are other more fun. But go click on Xenorealm 3D.
Xenorealm 3D. Got it. Oh, wow. It is a 3D game.
Yeah, go click on, I think try the desktop. Go to the iPhone version. It's probably better. Go back and try that. Just click on the iPhone sim. Yeah. So the disc at the bottom, you control, and that moves you around.
Wow.
And so that's all 3D. I mean, it's all inside of 2048 characters. And so there was another game that a person had built that very similar to this. They built it in like just under 3,000 characters. Another was kind of like trying to create like
3,000 characters?
Doom. Yeah. This is 2,000 characters. This is just 2,000 characters.
That's amazing.
So I tried to beat that one with like even a smaller game that was completely playable on an iPhone. Literally, you could scan it and it would run off of it and be under 2,048 characters.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah, it's a Yeah, you can do that. You know, I also did something to kind of, I don't know if you want to say cheats, but I did stuff where I had like, I would use emoji because like emojis are system level and I could put those in there. But yeah, there you're doing it. This is a 5-level game. You go through there and there are different enemies at each level that come at you. And it created, you know, looks like a, you know, first person shooter.
Yeah, it looks like a 2.5D from like Wolfenstein era. Yeah.
Go back. There's another couple games. I made a fighting game. There's Red Belt Enter the Dojo and Red Belt Combat, which were just like, I wanted to create like the most minimal figure that I could to do like fighting and, you know, just like create like this sort of like fighting character. So you go there and there are different characters that have different fighting styles. I had to iterate to try to find like what's the best sort of style for this. So best played on iPhone. If you go to codexarcade.com and you click on them, you can play them there. But again, they're all under 2,048 characters. That was the challenge, was to try to make games that were that small, which then makes you think a lot about game mechanics. Like, what do you need to have? Like, notice, I don't have a scoreboard. I just have these bars up above. Mm-hmm. If you go to Red Belt Enter the Dojo, there's a whole Red Belt franchise, everybody. I hope you know. And there, like, if you go to the iPhone one, might be easier, but you'll see that like as you start to compete and win, you start to get belts that'll appear up above. Like you're starting to get your yellow belt, right? So as you go up each level, as you defeat more people, you get that or you lose it. Again, it was just the strategy of figuring out like, how do I maximize those characters and give you playability of games? And so this was, you know, that approach. So anyhow, they're not like, I actually go back and I play some of those things over and over again. And now I've been sending Justin like my aerial flight sim, my every time something comes up in some heart, like my A10 Warthog attack game, which is actually, that's not a 2048 character game, but
it's good. It's good. I've played through every one that you sent me.
Yeah. I've got an Apache helicopter one I'm working on. I'm just trying to make it more fun. But yeah, that's been my commentary on the war is I just like, oh, I wonder what it's like to fly this airplane and do this combat mission. And yeah. I won't do that now. I have a B-1 bomber, B-2 bomber mission one and whatnot. And so anyhow.
I have one. If I'm placing a review, could you add a button where you add arms? That would be great.
Yeah, I know, Brian. Listen, 2048 characters, Brian. That was the next feature on the list, but unfortunately, yeah.
Oh, just barely made it. It didn't. It got cut for time, not for content.
I do advise. Like, I think it's fun for people. Like, for me, like just playing this made me think a lot about controls and mechanics, what you do and don't need. Because the hard part is with Code Jewels, it's so easy to add bells and whistles.
Yeah. Or, as they called it on the Google team, as a negative pejorative until it became the name of their browser, Chrome. We're just unironically watching Brian play a stick figure game.
Yeah.
Yeah. The ability to do that with Codex is just really, really unique. And I played around with the plugins last night, trying to create more of an automated workflow for a few things that I've wanted to do in terms of like prep doc generation. One of my goals over the weekend is just to really kind of lean into that and use, you know, one of the biggest things is Notion. They have a Notion plugin and just creating workflows for emails and for other data that I just need to kind of have in each prep doc that, you know, oftentimes kind of can slide to the side or become, you know, something that takes a lot longer time because I have to do it by hand. But there's no reason not to automate it now, and having Codex be able to run that workflow is a very attractive option. But it really is unique. I tend to have found, you know, just because I'm such a novice with coding, it's a lot easier for me to kind of think through things in, you know, I'm probably doing something that I don't need to do, but I'll think through things in ChatGPT and then, you know, paste prompts into Codex just because I don't know what Codex would do if I'm noodling on an idea.
Have you asked?
Yeah, it usually does stuff, and I don't know what it's doing. And so it's really, yeah.
Well, I tell it, like, let's ideate, don't write code, because it's the same model now. It's 5.4. It's the same model in both of them. And
yeah, but then, I don't know. So I have, then there's the Codex model. Do I want to use the Codex model when it's coding?
It's the same. No, 5.4 is the same model in ChatGPT.
It's not, it's not a separate...
What Andrew is saying, Justin, is to don't. There's no need to move the conversation part to a different app.
No. I know what he's saying. Sorry, not 5.4 Codex, 5.3 Codex.
No, so just use 5.4.
I should just be using 5.4 for everything.
Oh my God, you've been using 5.3 Codex? Oh,
again, the fear of looking like an idiot. Well, thank good that didn't. Reason why I am doing these things.
So yeah, there's this 5.4 unified everything. So 5.4, and again, for now, the two models are 5.4, which is 5.4, which is the same model in ChatGPT now. So you use that. Great all-around model. So it has, what they did is they unified their code model with the regular ChatGPT model. So it writes great, does everything. And that's why, like, a lot of people internally OpenAI who aren't even technical are now just using Codex for everything. And it's why I think a lot of stuff is just moving to Codex. If you want to do something super fast, remember how we talked about the, you know, remember when I did all the demos with the high the
Spark,
speed, you know,
right?
Yeah, that's Spark now. That's like, we were so excited by how fast things are doing. Yeah. It's 5.3 Codex Spark. So, yeah.
So then, for example, all right. So if I'm like, hey, I want to ideate on something, I'd like to create good prompts, like for what I'm doing. I like to structure what my goal is so I can optimally do it. I should do that in Codex and just tell it to just say
like, hey, I'm working on, like, I want to brainstorm with you. Give me some ideas or let's work on this. Let's do this. Don't write any code yet.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's one of those things where I do think that a huge hump that a lot of people are having now is that they have learned that they now have the ability to do stuff, but there is a big psychic chasm between believing you can do something and, because of the lack of knowledge, you don't know what you don't know, right?
Yeah.
And you know, you hear amazing things, you watch people build amazing things that are more knowledgeable, and you're like, okay, well, I'm going to take a wild guess that I'm probably, like, you know, I can do something 30% as impressive, but because you don't know what you don't know, it's you're kind of feeling around in the dark a little bit.
Oh, of course. And the problem too is that these things are very uneven. You know, you and I, you're still using ChatGPT Atlas?
Me?
Yeah.
Who the F you think you're talking to?
I know. And I'm saying, like, I am, me, you, Roshni, we're like super big users and we talk to other people.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I tried it. And I think part of it is sometimes somebody goes in there and tries something that they have a reason to expect it should do and it doesn't do. And then they're like,
no,
hey.
I've got Atlas things. I need to hit up our friends who we interviewed. I got to at reply because I have a feature request for Atlas because I don't know if people have noticed, for people who are using it, but the ChatGPT button that is omnipresent in the top right corner that will open up a little side drawer so you can interact with ChatGPT, knowing what is on the screen, right? Lately, they've been experimenting with ChatGPT guessing what you would want to do. So it'll, like, animate, slide out with, like, oh, would you like to do X, Y, and Z? I need to just tell it, no, when I'm on these websites, I just want it to give me the one thing that I am always asking for. I want personalized things per website because 9 times out of 10, if I'm on Politico, if I'm on thehill.com, if I'm on Axios, I need you to summarize this in a paragraph because I'm going to read it as a news item on PX3. Like, that's what I need and want. I would just love it if that was one button as opposed to /summarize in paragraph form. But it's like stuff like that is the reason why I use Atlas all the time. I mean, just that and the fact that I want it to know my entire browser history so it just has a better memory of who I am and can serve me better.
Well, that's where Anthropic and OpenAI are both working towards, is just this incredible connectivity and operability. And what I like about Atlas is just, I've had people like, I like this plugin here, whatever. I'm like, you don't understand Atlas, because it's the way they built it. It just has way more capabilities than doing just as a plugin. And now we're in this just crazy space. The fact that they have plugins and this app is still so new.
Well, I mean, and also it might go away, right? Because now the super app is coming. I don't know when the super app is going to be here, but they're talking about a super app, and it's going to flatten everything into one thing, which is probably going to prevent Brian from getting Codex on Windows, because they're going to come out with the super app.
Well, it's on Windows now.
No, no, no. Yeah, Atlas is what it is.
Oh, Atlas.
Oh, Atlas. Yeah. Atlas.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll see. Is Codex a super app?
I think that would be a leap for the normies. The problem with Codex being the super app is either you're going to have to handy code it for the dummies like me, so I know what the hell I'm doing, or you're going to piss off the hardcores, unless there's an easy way to snap it to exactly what you want, which maybe that's the solution, or it's going to be, you're going to have like that one moment that I had when I first got Codex where I don't know what a repo is. And I'm like, okay.
What is a repo?
What do I do?
Yeah, I agree. I just wonder though that like, is it, because once I tell people it's a folder, you know, or you have a folder, you go, oh, I get it. I'm not saying it in this form, but I wonder, you know, again, we'll see.
I mean, I think that, obviously you need a web browser side of it. Like, I don't know. I mean, I think them doing a super app is something that I'm very, you know, I don't know if I'm head over heels for, because, you know, I have a tendency to like my things in different places. That being said, Atlas came out and it totally evaporated my use of the ChatGPT app. Like, it was a one-for-one replacement. I don't ever use the ChatGPT app anymore. I only use Atlas. So, you know, now it's like, okay, if you're like, oh, you can also vibe code in Atlas, then I'm like, cool. And meanwhile, for some people, it'll be like, oh, cool. If Codex had a web browser, I would just never leave that app. And maybe that's the, you know, it's some happy middle there.
Yeah. Look into an experiment right now with Google Drive, because one of the things you could do theoretically in ChatGPT is store it to Google Drive and open the document up in Atlas, which you can do.
Brad Leclerc was singing the praises of this GitHub thing, Oh My Codex, and he was saying that it's a set of agents and systems for planning different parts of the process without having to figure everything as yourself. So basically it's an abstraction layer that allows you to kind of work on different parts all at the same time, as I understand his explanation.
What's it called?
Oh My Codex, and there's an Oh My Claude.
Okay. Yeah, you're getting a lot of people publishing prompts like his repos, because they find some really helpful ways to do stuff now. You know, and it's funny, because then somehow like Gary Tan, the head of Y Combinator, had, you know, had his G stack and said, the CTO told me this is going to change everything. And maybe, I don't know. But it was just this, you know, we also got a lot of flack, because like, all right, so the guy that runs, you know, Y Combinator is getting people telling him how brilliant he is. And it's like, dude, maybe it's because you run YC. I think these things can be super helpful.
What is a repo?
A repo is where you store a repository. So let's say GitHub, you store your code there. Just really, it's a short for repository.
Got it.
It's a folder in the cloud, Brian. Turns out a lot of these things, and just not terribly, you know, you just go, oh, we just called it that. I get it, you know.
Well, so I wonder, this is a very strange time where it's very, very cognitively taxing to rethink your entire mental model of a thing. And we made the conscious decision years ago to start doing it because we didn't know where things were going to shake out, but we didn't want to get left behind. I don't blame anybody who's waiting for, like, what is the thing? Like, the chatbot made sense. It's kind of like a fake person. It's a black box, and I talk to it, and I get things back. But then when you get into, like, you know, 5-4 working on projects, it's clearly got documents that aren't immediately visible to me in workspaces that I don't entirely have a map for where they are. And so I find myself constantly saying, let me download whatever you have right now, so at least I have it in case things go sideways. And it's strangely, you can, it's a bit like working with David Milch, where it's like he's losing his mind. He's very talented. He's cognizant of the fact that he'll sundown at some point, but you work with him while you can until it's late in the day. And the gap between what is possible and what we can wrap our minds around, it's going to be really taxing to just rethink everything.
I have a process now that's one of the things I'm sharing with executives is, and it was something I did early on at OpenAI, was that I have a list of tests, things that I use for evaluations that start off just I needed a demo to basically show off GPT-3. And then some of them worked well, some of them didn't. And then every time there was a new model, I'd revisit it and go back and show you the things. Now it's become my internal way that I do this. And I advise a lot of people to say, oh, I went into Atlas and I asked it to make a list of 100 things and it stopped at 20. I'm like, cool. Save that in a notepad. Save that as your test, your own eval. I think we should all think about our own eval sets, because what's helpful is periodically you hear, oh, new model, new update. Go try it. And you might find, oh, my eval worked. And now this thing solves a thing for me, rather than you get people like, it won't even tell you who's president. I'm like, are you like from 4 years ago? Are you a time traveler? Do you not know? Like, oh, it gets these things wrong.
Well, and again, try that. So this is something like, as a magician, you know, we know that getting fooled by a trick is not a reflection of your intelligence. It's simply an asymmetry of your mental map being out of sync with what is actually happening. And so likewise, everybody, it would be weird if everybody had the cognitive bandwidth and time to update their mental map. I mean, every time we do this show, I learn that everything I knew last week is totally wrong. So it's like, I don't know. I try to be patient with people.
Well, my impatience is not that they have a different view of where it is, that they think it hasn't changed or can't change. That's my impatience, is I go, well, did you try it again? No, I made up my mind. And I'm like, oh.
Well, part of this is like just the difference fundamentally that this technology has with almost every technological revolution that we've had in our lives, even with people that pay really, really, really close attention to everything, which is just the development cycle of this technology is unlike anything we've ever seen. We have never seen anything develop this fast in hardware or software ever. You know, like we...
It's an ideological hurricane.
Or I am going to vibe code a better email app for myself. Not because, for no other reason other than like the technology around email has not been what I want it to be. And we just deal with it. We just understand, yep, that's what email is. One static box where things come in. And at some point 10 years ago, they invented buckets where it's making smart decisions as to put random stuff, random places. And I hope it gets it right. But my email sucks worse every single day. And the only thing that was worse than that was when we decided we needed to kill email. So we invented social media and Slack. And now I hate that worse than I hate email. So now we're back to email being the best thing ever. But like this core tech, these models are, I mean, hell, 5.4 dropped when? A month ago? And now we're talking about a new model. I mean, Claude, the latest Opus model dropped in February, And they're talking about, you know, through data leaks over the last 24 hours that there's two brand new massive models that are going to change fundamentally, you know, how people think about AI. And there's rumors that OpenAI have the same thing. Like, we're just moving so quickly. Sora comes out, number one app in the world on all on the iPhone app stores, and then $1 billion deal with Disney. Now it's gone. It's just gone.
Well, right? And like, not only that, but not only is it gone, because we're accustomed to previous generations of new technologies that in our lifetime is thing is new thing is possible. Great. Thing gets better. We understand both of those. The creative destruction, the markets falling out for indispensable. What is indispensable today? If I had to place a bet on what could vanish in the next month, like there's no way I'd be in the neighborhood in terms of anything.
But even then, it's like
five.
So go ahead, Andrew.
5.4 was 3 weeks ago.
3 weeks ago, 5.4 came out, and now all anybody can talk about is Spud, and with Claude, it's Mythos and Capybara and all these things that are like, and some of these things are leaking out via rumors, but some of these things are being leaked out by these companies themselves. They're moving so incredibly fast.
I would say that I don't know if OpenAI or Anthropic intentionally would leak anything. They do get much more leaked than they were before, but I don't think they would intentionally, because there's issues with that, but. It was funny because last night the rumors of Claude Mythos came out, because apparently they were in a part of the website that was publicly accessible,
yeah,
but hadn't been secured. And one of the things about Mythos was the fact that it could have a cybersecurity risk because it's so powerful. And you're like, the irony of that was just, and again, it could happen to anybody. So I don't want to be like, but it was just like, oh, so your latest model super coding tool that maybe was used for this has this happen. And this is just kind of, I think this is things are moving fast.
And by the way, for the record, I'm not here to say that anybody is intentionally leaking, you know, in a way to generate hype per se. But I do think that when you put things out for testing and you trust more people to go out there and do it, there's just a reality that people are going to see things, you know, are coming, and you see it often with the blind testing websites and you know, and then people talk. It's not a gigantic field still, but it's crazy. I mean, this is not a world where you can have the same idea of a development cycle that we would have before. Before, it's like, if your favorite tool had an annual update that made it meaningfully better, you'd be loyal to that tool for the rest of your life. You would love it because it would be, you'd be looking at that as, oh, thank God, this is a great team. What an amazing team that works all year round so they can give me one update. And now we're at a point where it's like, okay, cool. We're going to get a new model that reshapes everything every 3 weeks. Like, where are we at the end of the year? Does it even look like Earth? And to your point, Brian, what I was going to say is, like, when we think about things that it's going to replace, that it's going to go away, I also wonder where we're at with that thought by the end of the year of, like, you know, is it replacing things? Is it supercharging things? Like, is it making, I mean, I don't know where it's going to count for headcount, but if we look at getting things done, the one thing that I do think that is real, that is very, very real right now, is that there is a digital divide between the have and have nots of people who are paying attention to this and are realizing that they are waking up with superpowers, and people that are not. And I'm begging you, folks, get on the train, baby. Get on the train. Start screwing around with it. Doesn't matter what level that you're at. Andrew came in as a self-taught coder. Now he's making 50 arcade games that could be played on a toaster in, you know, a 72-hour period. You know, I am doing things. I'm editing. I am prepping. I am researching. I'm creating scores for episodes of you know, for podcast production, the likes of which that I would never be able to do in the future, in the past. And it's because I'm just playing around. I'm just dicking off.
So, a couple updates as we spoke. There's been a new update to the ChatGPT app, by the way.
Everything we've said this far in the hour, all irrelevant. Six just dropped.
Yeah, it's made a simpler layout, but you can see the top row has all the things. They also now, OpenAI has a website that has Codex use cases, which is a bunch of different use cases for using Codex that you can just click and it'll open right inside of Codex.
Where is this website?
developers.openai.com/codex/use-cases.
Developers.openai.com/use/cases?
.com/codex/use-cases.
There we go. Yeah. Codex use cases. Yeah, it's interesting because in order to make it frictionless to onboard, some human has to spend enough time to say, yes, onboard. But meanwhile, what are you onboarding to? Do you want to spend that time this week for something that next week is not going to be the right set of stacked metaphors?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the key is you kind of go back to, like I said, have your evals, have the thing that you know that you need to get done. And then you basically figure out, like, okay, when is it more efficient for me to switch? You know, and when is it more efficient for me to stay where I'm at? And a lot of people just assume I'll just stay and just wait. But I think the reality is you have to be a lot more flexible with that.
Yeah, my latest advice to anyone is, don't try to write any prompts anymore. Try to grow them. Like, suggest in the hypothetical that you may be considering a prompt and then discuss where it might go and then have it suggest things and then start small, 0 to 1, and then enhance from there. I'm having a lot more success with that iterative mindset these days.
Yeah. That's just it. There's some people it's not efficient to be so much on the bleeding edge, but eventually we all have to be. I, of course, typing into Codex right now, trying out a thing. So one of the things that's kind of cool is they have a thing called skills, which is you could basically, if that involves doing things in a certain way, whatever, you just save that as a skill, which has become a standard format for a lot of agent stuff, which makes it easy for repeating things over and over again. You can just save it to a skills folder, which is what we'll probably do for weird things is create a, probably an upload skill. Like what we might just do is just create a thing where, because right now we built a backend tool to do it, but I'm like, eh, it's getting janky.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. You know, the way that we're going to think about what is building is going to change. I mean, I think, I don't know if we talked about it here, if it was just off air with you guys, but, you know, the Apple App Store is like, you know, more jammed up than the Strait of Hormuz, babe. you can't get anything approved because there's so many people that are submitting things for it, and they have their own rules against AI built or things. And I almost feel like we're at a moment where there's going to either have to be another place of like experimental land where everybody's crazy ideas are going to go, and then you have to wonder whether or not that's just going to be the place where people want to download stuff because the cool new thing will be there and not in 5-star vetted app store land.
Well, and I don't think app store is all that vetted anymore. I mean, my crit with that has been, it's so flooded with BS reviews. I don't trust anything. I don't trust anything in the app. I trust it. It probably isn't going to have malware in there. But even then, you know, I don't have the confidence I did in Apple that I did before, because 5 stars, they found themselves that apps have become a huge incentive for them, and predatory apps that get people to sign up for subscriptions are there. And it's that thing of like, careful what you're incentivized for. And Apple was incentivized for predatory apps.
Let me ask you guys a question. So I had the most recent episode of PX3. I have Andy Beach, who's worked in the world of technology and AI for a little bit. And he was talking about the federal AI framework that came out. And I don't necessarily want to talk about that for now. He has problems with it.
what I asked him is what I will ask you guys, because Andy made comments about like social media, that we waited too long to rectify some of the ills about social media. And whether or not you agree with that, let me ask you this question. If you were to go back in time to a certain moment and you knew in your head that you were going to be able to successfully either lobby for some kind of change, either governmentally or maybe even in the private sector, that would make social media better, where would, when would you go and what would you do?
Never.
The problem isn't that we didn't have an authoritarian government step in and save us from ourselves. The problem is we knew 15 years ago, you could see, oh, these things maximize your attention. They will continue to maximize your attention. I stopped using Facebook 10 years ago. Because yeah. I saw what it was, and it was clear. There were reports. We understood that these things in small doses were good and were fun and useful. Over in larger doses, they became parasocial and became problematic. We knew that. That was there. And it wasn't the job of government to step in and say no, because that's not what it's supposed to do, because some people use it all day long and they're fine and some don't. I have very limited patience for this. Oh, what could we have had Congress do? No, like you're saying, why am I so weak?
I don't think he mentioned Congress. I think that the question is
government or government or private sector.
He said government.
Oh,
okay. He said government specifically,
or private sector. I also said or private sector.
Okay. But, well, because what I was thinking is like, the validation is hallucinatory. The reach is not there. There is a high asymmetry of perceived, messages infect your brain. Like basically just sort of, it's the cognitive biases. It's like, if I could go back in time and save people 10 years of mentally torturing themselves about online stuff and instead, you know, it's that midwit meme of like the real wise ones are social media isn't real life. And then the real dumb ones are like social media isn't real life. And everyone else is losing their mind in the middle. Those are the people that I would love to use a time machine to let them know.
What would I do about alcohol? Like, what do we need to know? We know. I just kind of like, for me, it's social media. Like, and my patience wears thin.
I mean, we did restrict alcohol sales under a certain age.
Oh, we did prohibition too. I understand that, but I'm saying like that was literally chemical reasons to do this. My issue is, I don't think the government has any business interfering between the free speech of one group or another or a service or whatever that isn't like the moment we start saying. And again, I know to broaden it to business and stuff. The data was there, and we told people, it's like, yeah, I know. I'm like, cool, this is your choice. Parents, I have friends that are parents, their kids don't have really responsible social media habits. I have friends, their kids have terrible ones, and also have friends, there's kids who drink, you know? And I go like, I can tell you it's a parenting problem, not a government problem.
Let me steer it away from the idea of overuse or the distortion effects that social media or these things could have, and rather, like the thought that I had is if you go back to a point, and I don't know exactly where in the aughts this would be, but my guess would be somewhere in between like 2009 and, you know, maybe the beginning of the 10s or something like that. When it became very clear post IPOs for Google and Facebook that the advertising market was tilting toward these outlets, and they would be rising in a share of marketing dollars, and other places like television and radio and billboards and magazines would be shrinking, newspapers would be shrinking. If you could at that moment put some outer edges on, like, you know, like right now Facebook knows that there are scams that are advertised on there. Like, not, I don't mean like, you know, dumb stuff at the back of a comic book that it doesn't actually.
Yeah, you're not talking about things that will disappoint the consumer. You're talking about fraudulent deceptions.
Fraudulent scams that Facebook allows on its platform and then charges them higher fees because it's a risky ad. They are being cut in essentially to things that are meant to out and out deceive and thieve their customers. like I would say outer restrictions on stuff that hit those kinds of guardrails, I think early on would have been something that might have made for a healthier platform, similar to the App Store. If you look at some of the deceptive practices of setting up subscriptions or games that are marketed to kids under, you know, let's say 16 that have multiple different subscription options that are easily triggered. Like there are things where I think not the core element of are people paying too much attention to social media, but in the outer edges of what it is, I wonder if we had those, if the products would be better and healthier. If part of the idea of the maximalization of the kind of ads that they can sell does create on some level unhealthy incentives that might trickle down to where we are looking at it. In general, I agree with you, Andrew, that we are all responsible for our own time, and that this is my new crusade, is that I feel that the only thing that we lack in our modern Western world is discipline, not necessarily the fetishizing of our access to all these kinds of exciting, dopamine-rich digital treasures, be they Facebook or mobile gambling. But I do think that there are kind of like on the edges of the products, there are things that we could reasonably trim. And I wonder if it would make for a better mousetrap.
Oh, we may have lost Andrew.
I'm here.
He's been replaced with Andrew Six.
Yeah, I guess I just, and again, you can see my patience gets kind of worn thin, because it was things that we knew 15 years ago, conversations we were having in 2010 and 2011 about attention spans and things like this that were obvious. They were actually obvious. And then you watched people, and 15 years later, we're like, we need to do this. Like, I think that we could have been doing one. I think there was a hysterical reaction to social media in one regards where we basically like, it's like anything. It has value, but if you're overusing it, that has problems. If you're not doing that, you know, the thing about Facebook with the pricing higher risk ads, like I would love to parse to see how they kind of define it, because as described like that, like, yeah, that sounds like they could be sued over that if they are like knowingly pushing fraudulent things on you. I bet you they probably have a way of parsing it, but I see it with Apple, and I don't see enough. There was some criticism on like, hey, kids are accidentally subscribing to these $40 a month apps. And then Apple put in a policy that made it a lot easier to get a refund. And then it kind of made a bigger thing. If a parent got upset, they got the refund, they shut up and didn't go to the news. Meanwhile, still happening, still going on. You know, whenever I see somebody on Twitter who's like, my app, we're doing incredible App Store revenue. It's great. You know, look at us. We just did it. I'll go look and I'll see it's almost always fake reviews, because I'll go look at most recent. The most recent ones are like rip off, you know, deceptive subscription practices, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I hear on one hand, Apple has a brilliant strategy towards AI. They just waited and now they're going to use the whatever commoditized model. I'm like, maybe. I think it's really too early to tell. I can tell you that they are terrible, terrible, terrible at deploying it in the App Store. They should have been doing it, you know, 6 years ago. And now we've got this state where you have, there are a lot of great apps being vibe coded, right? I think a good coder vibe coding will make better apps and implement faster and make it better. Amateur coder will still make amateur stuff, but I think we're in this era of incredible capabilities. I think the App Store is sort of blocking that. But I just look at incentives, and I guess I'm ready for the next platform, ready for the next hardware. I got in front of me here. I've got my Mod Retro. I've got my Arju Boy. I've got other things. I'm ready for another portable pocket device that just lets me run things I want to run.
Yeah. I agree. You have any picks?
I will go first. And my pick, as I slowly try to recall.
What did you think of Hail Mary?
I'll get two picks. Loved Hail Mary. Project Hail Mary was wonderful. I got invited to a screening last Friday. It was very cool to see it. It was delightful.
you know, I know that Lord and Miller made some changes. And then after when I was watching YouTube videos about what they changed, all their changes were just great and just helped bring the story even more close to, I loved it. I have no notes. It was probably my favorite Ryan Gosling role so far. I thought he did a fantastic job. Loved it. Absolutely loved Hail Mary.
Yeah, it's great.
I got to see it. I got to see it. My pick is the Ferber method. It's a way to get your child to sleep. We're going to be implementing it tonight. Oh, geez. You know, kids. I'll tell you, this daughter of mine, man, she's lucky she's cute. She, you know, talking and saying things, and she likes blowing bubbles. That's fun. Less fun, teething. And so we are trying to get through that. But we think we're back on sleep training as of tonight. She fell into some bad habits while teething. And hopefully we can get back to her sleeping through the night. That's the goal. The Ferber method. Look it up.
Making a note.
My daughter, my 22-year-old daughter, had never seen Logan. Watched Logan. Guess what, guys? Holds up. Although, strangely, over the last 10 years, originally when it was released, they said it in the near future, but now it's just the present. It's amazing. It's great.
Man, Logan was so good.
My other pick is Arduboy FXC. So Arduboy is this based on the RGU Arena platform originally. It's this, I'll turn on my video. I was getting some janky video. Gentlemen.
Oh, that looks like an iPod Nano. Oh, yeah.
There's the Playdate, which was put out by Panic. I have the Playdate, no backlight, never use it. Arduboy, this has got tons of games. And you know what you can connect to and start building games with?
What is Hopper?
That's probably a game
I'm actually playing some Catacombs of the Damned here.
So he's developing his own games, Brett, for the Arduino boy.
Actually, I haven't started that yet. I just played without it, but you can do, like, look.
Oh, look at that.
You want a game, like a little game system. Like, I think.
So these are all original, or are they like Game Boy?
They're originals. They're originals. They're original games here. There's a whole community making Arduino games. The display on this is great. It's tiny. I look at this form factor. I'm like, somebody could probably put in a wider screen or a bigger thing, like probably double the width based on the availability list. Make a $99 platform now with vibe coding and stuff. Like, I'm telling you, like hardware's back, baby. And somebody's going to take this or some form factor, get a double the size screen. And I think it's going to be, because you can fit so much into this credit. It's about the size of maybe 4 credit cards thickness. Fits in your pocket. I'll take it on trips and stuff. I'll get bored, pull this out, play a little game there. It's amazing. I love it.
You know, so our friend Darren has the new Samsung Trifold phone.
Yeah.
That, you know, like, now it's like, it's essentially kind of like, you know, where we are now in cloud software and stuff like that. It really is almost more of a laptop replacement.
Yeah.
Than it is a cell. Like it is like a laptop replacement that also can take calls, basically. And it makes me think, it's like, man, I look at my MacBook and I'm like, my MacBook is amazing. I can't imagine editing audio on anything but a MacBook right now. I think I want almost a new, totally different form factor for editing audio. But like, for all other laptop related things and like running AI, like cloud AI stuff, like I think I really like that form factor and maybe a little keyboard or something like that. Like, I don't know. I'm into that idea. I don't know. I'm heading to a breakup with iPhone, but I don't know when it's going to come.
Yeah, I certainly found myself. I mean, I used to use my iPad all the time. Then my iPhone got big enough that I don't use an iPad anymore. I tend to not use my phone unless I have to, other than for that. But yeah, I'm ready for something. I would just love like a credit card size thing like this too for a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So Arjuboy FXC, let me see, what is the Arjuboy? The nice thing about this is there was the Arjuboy, then they added the upgrade to the FX, which made it like a faster processor. And then they have the FXC, it plugs in by USB-C. You can still order them. They did like a run of 500. There's still more available there.
Yeah, it looks gorgeous. BlueTech 97 says great design. I agree.
Yeah, $89. Or $80, you know, for the standard one. I've talked to the guy who did it. Really cool engineer. Just he's one of these guys who was like, I want to build this thing. I think it'll be really cool. Went, spec'd out the hardware, got it done, built it. They've done like three versions of this now. They're solid little things. At $80, charge it up. 300 games built into it. And literally just put it in your bag, you forget it, and then you pull it out. And I'm like, I'm in love with the form factor, in love with this. I was talking about different hardware things that could be done because just such a cool thing. And I do think it's like I talked before at the beginning, like kind of the future will be vibed is that, you know, once you simplify supply chain stuff and you get a lot of other people on board with what you're doing, you know, just absolutely super cool.
Right on.
Brian, did you have a pick?
Yeah, it was Logan.
Oh, we said Logan. Okay, so, yeah. Sorry. I forgot the Logan.
Yeah. Although, hooray, the best news of the week was Wonder Man gets a season 2. Von Kovac found a script.
Yep. Very cool. Gentlemen, it's been weird.